නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. වීතගේ දෝ අමච්චරි න උස්සේසු වදතේ මුනි, න සමේසු න ඕමේසු කප්පං නේති අකප්පියෝ තීති. Dear Venerable Brother, Dhamma friends, we were discussing Purabeda Sutta, which is available in the Attakavagga of the Sutta Nipata. And as we remember, so this sutta was uttered by the Buddha to the audience of many, many Devas and the Brahmas. That's a huge gathering of Devas and the Brahmas, a huge assembly. And during that time, certain Devas had the question. So, what needs to be done before the breaking off of the body? So, at that moment, Buddha knew their question, and then Buddha prepared another Buddha, kind of a mind-made Buddha, and a fair amount of Sangha. And this mind-made Buddha is now asking questions, and then the real Buddha is answering. Actually, there are a series of such suttas recorded in the Sutta Nipata. Depending on the questions asked by this mind-made Buddha, Buddha is answering, and one of that is the Purabeda Sutta. And in this sutta also, now we have come to the last part, so we have gone through a fair amount of verses available in the sutta, and now we can continue from where we have stopped. If I just touch the last verse, what we have completed, Tamrumi upasantoti kamesu anapekkhinam. Gantā tassana vijjanti athāriso visattikam. So here the idea is Buddha is talking about a peaceful person. We can call him as a muni, we can call him as a santa, kind of a peaceful person, and he has no expectation about the kāma, about the sort of sensual pleasures. So he has abandoned all that need, sensual desires, and so he has no expectation about the sensual pleasures. Gantā tassa na vijjanti, and the knots are not there, knots are not in his mind, and athāriso visattikam, he was able to abandon or penetrate the craving, tanha. So last time I explained this gantha, the knots. They are four types. The bodily knot of longing, abhijja kaya gantha, bodily knot of ill will, vyapada kaya gantha, bodily knot of seizing upon good behavior and observances, silabbata paramasa kaya gantha, the bodily knot of dogmatic adherence to claims of truth, idam satchabhinivesa kaya gantha. Now, interesting thing is when one's mind is associating any of the sensual object, if he has a desire, so mind lands upon it and starts thinking about it, proliferate about it, and get tangled in it. Suppose that your mind is fairly open and there is no any particular attachment, there is no any relevant reference to an object, and mind is free. So you may be able to experience that time to time. But once it is get tangled with an object, so then you can understand, okay, there is a little hindrance here, there's a little tangle here, a kind of a knot here. But now mind is not free. Its freedom was broken. Now the mind again has concentrated to a particular selected desired object. And while being there, you also feel little delighted, delight. And you might even prefer to stay there further. So you have prepared a kind of a home to the consciousness. So this is the tangle that we can understand. So whenever a mind is going through certain preferences, certain sensual desire, and a certain sensual object being focused, so you start feeling certain amount of an agitation, certain amount of a delight as a result of that association, and the mind get tangled there. So there's a kind of a knot ultimately established, and you feel kind of aberration while staying there. So likewise, the Buddha explains four types of such mental knots, bodily knots. So those are the sensuality related, abhijja kayagantha, and then the ill will related, such kind of a knot, kind of a tangle. And then certain rituals and observances related, such kind of a knot, a tangle. And on the other hand, once when one has a certain particular view, strongly adhere to it, strongly believing it, established in it, so that is also kind of a hindrance, kind of a tangle, kind of a knot, where the mind gets established. So the idea is how to keep the mind completely unattached, completely freed, completely independent, and kind of a pervaded state. Now we can get into the next verse. Na tassa putta pasavo kettang vattuncha vijjati attavapi nirattava na tasming upalabbati. So this arahant who has no sons or cattle and does not have any fields or land, attavapi nirattava, and he has no anything to adhere or attract or to reject. So that is completely abandoned. So kind of a mind which is well balanced. So mind is not absorbed to anything, mind is not attracted to anything, neither it get rejected, nor it get rejected or repulsive to anything. So maintaining a very good equipoise, the evenness of the mind. So this is what encouraged here. So how the mind being well balanced. So the mental well-being is well maintained, so the mind is well balanced, and it doesn't have any repulsion, nor it has any attraction. So a very balanced state of mind. Now, on the other hand, if it has any kind of an attraction, then there may be so many possessions. Here certain examples are given. Maybe claiming sons, daughters, wives, children, maybe house, maybe fields, gardens, etc., etc. So various different kinds of sense objects. These things are the what we typically attracted and we typically encouraged to have. But the arahant doesn't have any of these. So he is basically free of all that, and his mind is also free. And he doesn't possess any of these. He may be using them for a particular purpose in case he has to handle them. Suppose there is a monastery, there is a kind of a garden on which he has to reside. Other monks are also residing. So this is possible. But anyway, in his mind, they are not strongly adhered to, they are not strongly possessed by. His mind is not overwhelmed by any of those possessions. So that's the idea. And then yena nang vajjum putujjana atho samana brahmana tang tassa apurakkhatang tasma vadesu nejati. So sometimes actually people are getting into various arguments. They come on to debates, and it is common even they come to debates with the arahants. And sometimes with the Buddha also, they come into debates. And so they sometimes speak to him. But during this discussion, he is not stirred up by the words. So there are instances like, say for example, Satchaka. So he came to stir the Buddha, argue or have a debate with the Buddha. And he challenged while coming there that I will ask various questions so that the Samana Gotama will not be able to answer them, so that he starts sweating. All those exaggerations were there when Satchaka was coming to debate with the Buddha. And he actually asked certain questions, and Buddha also answered them, and Buddha also asked questions from Satchaka. Ultimately what happened? So Buddha even opened part of his robe and showed that I have no sweating. But But you are now very much like get into a trouble. You are being hindered. You are being cornered because you couldn't answer the questions, and your answers are also contradicting each other. So likewise, amidst the gathering, so Satchaka actually became quite embarrassed. So this is recorded in certain suttas. So likewise, the Buddha and the other arahants, even though they are questioned, so they are not very much get into any shaking or stirring because of the words, but they were able to maintain their calmness, peacefulness of the mind. And the other verse, if we take, Vitagedo amachari na ussesu vadate muni na samesu na omesu kappang neti akappiyo. Now this is a very interesting verse. Vitagedo amachari. This is straightforward, where he doesn't have any sensual desire or any miserliness. And on the other hand, as a result of the conceit, there is a possibility of having a kind of a measurement, comparison. But for the arahants, that is also not there. So he is not comparing himself as an individual with the other individuals. So if we consider ourselves as a particular individual, I am so and so. So automatically we might be tempted to compare ourselves with the another person. So I am better than him, I am equal to him, I am inferior to him. So likewise we get into a certain view, an idea, okay, I am better than him. So you put yourself in a pedestal. Or else, even though you are not really equal, probably you can measure and say, okay, I am also like him. I am also equal to him. On the other hand, if you are in a little downside, then probably you put yourself in the down. So I am inferior to him. He is better than me. So this kind of a measurement, comparison, is automatically sometimes happening within our mind. When you are talking with someone, when you are dealing with someone, we attempt to compare. But for the arahants, when the conceit is completely abandoned, when asmimana, the very subtle self-view, is completely abandoned, then he doesn't have any hook with respect to the asmimana. So typically we have a kind of a sense of I. So there is a person here, there is an individual here, there is I here. So such a pivotal point is there. So with respect to that pivotal point, we are dealing with the others. We are handling the others, we are talking to the others. But when that pivotal point is abandoned, uprooted, so there is no such reference. Now you are simply dealing with the others, but not making any self in you. So this is pretty challenging process actually, even though we are talking, so we can't immediately do that. But slowly, slowly we need to recognize how eye making happens, mind making happens within our mind, so that we are able to abandon it without promoting it. Sometimes thoughts are appearing in the mind, confirming a self, or kind of appreciating a self, trying to prove that there is a self. So such thoughts are sometimes happening. We should be skillful enough to recognize them, to understand them, and not to get tangled in them, not to encourage them, but to abandon them. So there's a kind of very subtle level practice that we need to occupy in order to abandon conceit. Particularly, as we previous occasion also discussed, the animitta, the signless state of the mind, is a very rich area for us to deal with this conceit. Animittancha bhavehi mananuse mujjah. So Buddha particularly mentioned in the Rahula Sutta of the Sutta Nipata, you better develop the signless state so that you are able to recognize conceit, and ultimately you are able to uproot conceit. And then other part, kappan neti akappiyo. Now this is a very interesting statement. He does not get into mental constructs. So mental construction. So mental constructs, mental construction, preparations. So this is something happening within our mind. So whenever we see a particular object, if it is a kind of an attractive object, we start picking certain signs from that object. And even now our eyes are closed, probably we start another internal process using those data, using those images, those signs, marks taken from that object. Now we do an internal construction. Internal mental construction is now going on. So that something we need to trace in our mind. And similarly, suppose that we hear a sound, maybe a song. So once we hear it, we are not simply allowing it to simply pass. Rather, we hold it, we attach to it, we add certain likes, dislikes onto it. Maybe certain past incidents, certain influence, we are adding to it. So we do this construction. So mind is now somewhat active, actively participating in this construction process. Similarly, when we go through certain smells, tastes, tangibles, and even when a particular thought comes to the mind, we are not simply allowing it to pass by, but rather we keep it in the mind and then do the construction, preparations, further construction, further additions, further multiplications, exaggerations. Now all these are happening within the mind, and typically in the commentary it is mentioned. So this happens because of two reasons. One reason is the craving, other reason is the views. So when we have fair amount of tanha, craving, so whatever the object touches the mind, we have certain attachment to it, we like it, we want to hold it. So we tempt to do further constructions. In case it has any kind of a defect, so we can fill it. So that we further like it. Ultimately, what we like is our own constructed object. It is not the real object, but we have added all so many other our likes. We have projected certain our likings into it. Then we get attracted to it. We get further attached to it. Ultimately, we grasped it. So we are doing fair amount of construction. We are doing our own additions, preparations onto any kind of an object. And if we are able to understand that, if we are able to notice this construction process, and actually then we can laugh at us. So why we are doing it? Why we are tempted to do this sort of manipulations, internal constructions? So more and more we look at it, more and more we are able to understand it, we tempt to stop it. Because we understand it's a useless process. So I am the one adding my likings and dislikes into it. So the object itself doesn't have such kind of a taste. It's a merely a neutral object. So I am the one adding my own preferences into it, my prejudices into it. So if I am able to understand that, then slowly, slowly I can stop that, so that they become mere sankhara, suddha sankhara. They become kind of pure formations, and we are not adding our own part into it. Due to some reason they appear, we are not making any kind of interference to them, so they disappear. Because they have the nature to come and go. They appear and then naturally they disappear. That is a rule. I don't need to interfere. So you stay back, step back. You can simply watch it without participating into the process. So this kind of a state more and more helps the mind to settle, makes the mind to calm down, makes the mind to become peaceful. And so that ultimately mind stops making constructions. Now that is the explanation, kind of a exclaim that Buddha did after he became the fully enlightened Buddha. So he is stating visankhara gatan chittam. So my mind is no more doing any such constructions. I am not adding any of my preferences into the experience. So this is a very interesting area. So a subtle area one can understand through the vipassana process. So more and more when one is observing one's mind, one may be able to understand this constructing process. Your own preparations, your own additions, your own preferences. And then if you are able to slowly withdraw from that construction, then the things are happening due to certain other reasons, not because of my any influence. Now constructions become less and less. Ultimately, we can achieve Sabba Sankhara Samatha, Nibbana, where all the constructions are kind of calmed down, all the formations are calmed down. So mind is maintaining peace, no agitation, no friction. Still kind of activities are going on, activities in the sense the kind of experiences are happening, but you are not putting your hand. You're not taking them inside. Things are there, but you are able to maintain a free mind, a kind of a unmixed mind, a pure mind, a pure consciousness. Able to maintain because that participation, that influence, unnecessary interruptions, all that are now stopped. So mind takes care of itself. So this beautifully mentioned here, he does not enter upon mental constructs. Not given to mental construction. So he is not promoting any such mental constructs. Rather, he promotes the calmness of the mind, evenness of the mind, peace of the mind, keeping the mind in a relaxed state, unbiased state, detached state, dispassionate state, and freed state. And then next verse, yassa loke sakannatti asatha cha na sochati dhammesu cha na gacchati save santoti vuccati. Yassa loke sakannatti asatha cha na sochati. So he does not take anything as belonging to him. Now, when we are taking something belong to us, so that indicates I am here. There's a presence of a self is accepted, and you believe that there is a self, you believe that there is an individual, you believe that there is a person. To that person, there are some possessions. So this is my house, this is my laptop, this is my cell phone, this is my robe, this is my t-shirt. So all that belongings indicate there is an owner. So I am the owner. So the underneath understanding or acceptance is that the presence of a self. But on the other hand, for the Arahant, so he has fully abandoned this sense of I. So then what can he believe that something belongs to me? So there can't be anything. He may be handling things, he may be using various requisites, but not possessing them as an individual. So the kind of a different state of mind that he may be maintaining, because that individuality is well penetrated, the self view is well penetrated, sense of I is totally abandoned. Now the process is happening due to typical causes and conditions. There is no eye-making, mind-making happens. So the process continues. There is no person into the picture. Maybe you are working, we'll take a scenario of an Arahant. So he is walking, but he doesn't feel that I am walking. He is sitting, he doesn't feel that there is a person, I sitting. He may be standing, but there is no person who is standing. And he may be lying down, but he is not taking it personally. There is no person who is lying down. Lying down process is there. The experience is there, but there is no experiencer. So this is a very interesting area, how certain experiences are happening without an experiencer. Thoughts are happening without the thinker. Seeing is happening without a seer. Hearing is happening without a listener. So likewise, so experiences are happening, but through the experience you are not making a self, you are not making an individual. So he therefore does not take anything belong to me, because there is no me, there is no I, there is no person. And not having things, he has no sorrow either. Now, when we have an individual, when we have a self, and when that self has so many things, we may be happy. So that's a typical attitude we have in the lay life. So we want to possess many things. So if you have one car, so that is not enough, you take another car. If you have one, say, house, if that is not enough, you take another house. So likewise, people want to gather things, accumulate things, and they believe that more they have, more can be happy, more they will be happy. So they acquire continuously, they acquire so many things having, so that is what they believe, okay, I'll be happy. So that's the typical mundane way of living in the worldly level. But on the other hand, in the monk's life, the opposite is appreciated, encouraged, where the appichata is encouraged. Having less, rather than you saying, okay, I have so many things, now you can understand I have less things. Say, if you consider a monk's life, okay, three robes are there, the ball is there, and there may be few medicines to cover up certain illness, and a place to stay, and then something to eat. That's it. So likewise, a very simple way of living without having many things, without having many belongings, without having many possessions. So this is what encouraged in the monk's life. Appichata, santuttita. And having less, also you are not being frustrated. You are not worrying that I don't have this, I don't have that. That worrying part, sorrowing part is also abandoned. Rather, you being happy while having less things. You being contented while having less things. So that's something interesting to hear. Now, typically when people have less things, they are unhappy, because they want many other things. So that is how we consider someone is poor. So when we say someone is poor, that is because he doesn't have many cars, a very good car, a good house, good wealth. So all that are something that people are looking for. And if they have less, so they feel frustrated, they feel unhappy. I am poor, I want this, I want that. So these are essential for living. So this is how we feel inferior because of not having things. But the opposite is true for the Arahants. He has less, and not having many things, he still has no worry. He still feels contented. He is still happy. Dhamme sucha na gacchati, save santoti vuchati. So his mind is not getting on to things, and he basically not attached to things. His mind is completely unattached, unassociated, and he is the person who is, we can say, a peaceful person. So all these interesting ideas are not mere kind of theoretical, hypothetical states. Rather, we have to see ourselves. So to which direction are we moving forward? Are we in the same old track of gathering so many things and possessing many things and calling them that they belong to me, and I am the big person, I am the boss, I am the senior, I am the superior, acquiring so many things? Or is this the path that I am following still? Or I may be having things but not being burdened by them, and not storing them in the mind. Mind is not occupied by their possessions. Even though certain possessions are there, they are not hindering the mind, they are not overwhelming the mind. Rather, you use them for the purpose, knowing their purpose, without any attachment. Actually, not only in this sutta, there are many other suttas where Buddha encouraged this state. Particularly for monks, Buddha encouraged the such way of living in the what we call the Aryavamsa Sutta. Aryavamsa Sutta is a very, very interesting sutta where the noble lineage is explained. How the very ancient noble lineage is continuing. And you become a part of that noble lineage. You become a member of that noble lineage. So, certain special qualities, appreciative qualities are there in that noble lineage. And they can be happy with less things. And even when they have things, they are not being overwhelmed by them. Their mind is not occupied by them. They are using them without any bias, without any attachment, knowing their purpose, and knowing that they also are impermanent. And one day this also may be broken, this also may be stolen, abandoned, all that are possible. So you are maintaining such kind of a very good balance with understanding. And if you don't have things, still you are not worrying, still you are not complaining. And you are being able to happy with what you have. And interestingly, Buddha points out, when you are doing it properly, in the proper manner, still you are not making a self out of that kind of a behavior. Say for example, when you feel quite good and you are not being overwhelmed by those desires and you are handling things properly, mind is maintained well, no attachment, no tangles, and probably you feel kind of a self-esteem because you are doing it properly. You are doing the exact job what Buddha encouraged and you are doing it fairly perfectly, and you might be able to keep yourself a certain conceited level because you are doing it well. But Buddha abandoned that also. He is telling, so don't do that either. So don't make a self out of your good behavior. So don't feel you are a superior person, that the other persons are inferior because they are unable to maintain such a good behavior. So don't do that either. You better maintain the good behavior, but not making yourself comparing with the others and taking you to a very upper pedestal and looking down the others. So that's not the idea. Attukkansana paravambana. So attukkansana is where you are putting yourself up because of your good behavior. Paravambana is where you are looking down the others because of their bad behavior. And Buddha encouraged not to do that. You need to be concerned about your good behavior and you should maintain a good behavior. But using that also, you are not supposed to make a self. So very, very interesting how Buddha, looking at various opportunities, how even our good behavior can cause a reason for making a self, being conceited. Because you are tempted to compare with the others and they are not maintaining such kind of a good behavior. So I am a special person, I am the son of the Buddha. Others are not so. And you can make a big self. But still, knowing that process, okay, I am not using even this good behavior, even this good sila, the morality, whatever the samadhi, whatever the wisdom, still you are not using to make a self. So very, very sharp, very, very refined way of handling things. So this is very well explained in the Aryavamsa Sutta, and with that actually we can take it to the this sutta, the Puraveda Sutta, where this Arahant, he is maintaining very little things, and so basically he feels that he has nothing in this world, and when he has no things, less things, still he has no worry, and he is not getting his mind into any particular object. Adhering into any object, maintaining the mind free, and so he is the peaceful person. So this is a very interesting way that we can finish the sutta. Actually, I prepared another sutta, but I feel this is enough for today because we have spent a fair amount of time. You can spend some time for question and answers, and I invite you to participate in the Dhamma discussion. Anything? Dhamma Saddha, Dhamma Alankara, or Kelvin? So we have a few members here today. So no questions from our side, Jennifer. So then let me start the next sutta because I have already prepared that, and I'll just touch that.